Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello. Thank you for joining us today. I am so excited today. Not only am I joined in the studio by Mary Perro, but also we've just been talking a little bit before we even started about the woman that we're going to be highlighting today. And her name is Maria Dyer Hudson. Actually, she'd be Maria Jane Dyer Hudson. Perhaps you've heard of Hudson Taylor. Well, that is his, the woman we're talking about today is his first wife. It is Maria. And the more I studied, the more amazing it got. So, Mary, I'm so glad you're here and we get to talk about this today.
I can't wait. I got a little, maybe not an afterglow, a pre-glow, pre-glow. Of what we're going to be talking about today, but there's so much more to the story. And so I'm really excited to hear about her.
I am so excited too. So Maria's parents, the Reverend Samuel Dyer and Maria Tarn, were among the first missionaries to China. Hmm. So her father was literally a pioneer into China with the gospel. He had been a reverend, and he had this very prestigious position at Trinity College in Cambridge. Hmm. But he grew restless, and he just did not want to study law for the rest of his life. He wanted to do something very purposeful for the kingdom of God, and China was burning on his heart. So he went to China with his wife and their son Samuel, and there they had two children, Barella, and then their daughter Maria, and it's Maria again that we'll be talking about. They settled in a place called Penang, which is also where Maria was born. But he went from Penang on a trip to Macau, which was closer to Shanghai, and he wanted to check on the ability to go to Hong Kong and to minister there when he unexpectedly caught a fever and died in 1843.
Oh, my.
Maria was only six. Her sister was only eight. We're not told the age of Samuel, but he was the oldest. Well, you can understand, here's this mom, and she is left with a six, an eight-year-old, and a young boy, and she doesn't know what to do. Well, she ends up marrying a man almost immediately named Bossom, and he is an excellent stepfather, and they continue to live and minister in China. He also was a fellow missionary, and they live until 1847 when Maria's mother suddenly dies after contracting an illness. So you can imagine, this is only 4 years later, and Maria at this time is only, you know, somewhere around 10 years old.
Mm.
So Bossom sends Samuel and Barella and Maria back to England, where they're looked after by their uncle, William Tarn. William was Maria Dyer's, Maria Dyer, the one that we're talking about, was her uncle or her mother's brother.
Okay.
He was a really, really godly man. He was very successful in business, and he and his wife were devoted to missions, especially to China. So you can imagine the kind of environment that Maria and Barella and Samuel were raised in, with this wonderful uncle and his wife who just loved them. Well, when Barella was 18, she decided to go to Teachers College, and Maria followed suit and went with her, and they went up to the north of England, and they studied at a teacher's college, and both of them, even though Maria was quite a bit younger, got their teaching certificates. Well, Barella then writes to a woman named Mary Aldersey, who was, by distinction, the first single woman missionary to China.
Amazing.
And when she had gone, Mary Aldersey, to China, she started a girls' school in China. And so Barella applies, and so does Maria, to come and to teach at this school in Ningpo. So Maria was 16 at this time. Barella is 18 or 19, and they go to China and they begin to teach. And they had both carried this hunger and this love for China ever since they were children. And so being back in China, they again began to pick up the language really easily because it was the language of their youth that they had learned, and it was the environment that they were used to. And they were amazing with these Chinese girls in the school. In fact, Maria was one of the students' favorite teachers, probably because she was young. She was vivacious, they said. She always carried a song in her heart, and she was very upbeat and passionately in love with Jesus. One of the interesting things of this story is when Barella and Maria were on the ship going to China, Maria had this profound experience with Jesus. I mean, she really, really encountered him. And she said before she felt like she was working for the Lord. You know, I'm going down there to be a missionary, to please my parents, to carry on their legacy. So she felt this huge weight that this is what she was doing. And as she encountered Jesus, Jesus said, will you just do it for me? Will you, instead of trying to build a legacy or continue a legacy, will you just do it out of love for me?
Yeah, just removing the sense of duty. It's
exactly.
Not about duty.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's about relationship.
Right. Or the pressure of having to be a success because her parents had died. And so now she's going to be a success and do what they hadn't done. And the Lord said, it's not about what you do for me, but what I do through you.
Well, that's beautiful.
And so she had this incredible well of joy. And from that moment on, she said she was just passionate for Jesus Christ. So Maria immediately endeared herself to Miss Alderseat, who took, she felt the responsibility of caring for these two young women, especially because Maria was considered a beauty. So Maria had dark hair and big brown eyes, except for she had a squint. And so what they mean by a squint is she had a lazy eye.
Oh, okay.
But she was still a beauty, and everyone who wrote of her said it didn't detract from her beauty, but she did have this lazy eye. She was tall, and she was thin. And as I mentioned before, she was vivacious. Mary Alderseat, as her, as the responsible party, I don't want to say guardian because she's not, and that will come up later as we tell this story. But having felt this responsibility for these two young, good-looking girls was always, what do I want to say, putting off the suitors. And Marie had quite a few young missionary men who were interested in her. In the summer of 1855, when Maria was 19, a young and somewhat controversial missionary who had been a medical student was brought to the compound in Ningpo because he was ill. The man was short, slightly built. He had sandy colored hair and wore glasses. The young man had come with the Chinese Evangelism Society, the CES. They didn't last very long, and we'll kind of talk about that a little bit into this. And having served in China for a year, he took little notice of Maria because he was already engaged to a young woman named Elizabeth in England. This was Hudson Taylor's second engagement.
I smell drama.
Yes. His first engagement had been to a music teacher. But when she found out that he was in earnest about going to China, she broke it off. She said, you know, when she couldn't convince him to stay and be a medical doctor in England, she broke it off. Like, that's not what I'm going to do with my life. I do not want to go to China.
Not for me.
He thought he could persuade her. He could not. And then the second fiance was a woman named Elizabeth, who had shown ardent love for Hudson, but Hudson had never been attracted to her. But down in China, he was lonely. He started thinking about Elizabeth. He asked his sister, Amelia, will you make the references for me so I can begin to write her? And then he began to build Elizabeth up in his mind as something that she never was. And I think he was in love with the idea of love rather than with the actual person because he had had no attraction for her at all in England, and she had pursued him and he was not interested. So Amelia made the introductions. As the correspondence went back and forth, he asked her to marry him. She agreed. She knew that would mean going to China, but she told him, I'm interested only in being on the coast and you setting up a medical practice on the coast. Well, he thought, well, you know, once I get her here, she'll catch the fervor and the love for the Lord and she'll want to go into the interior, because even now he's feeling this call into the interior of China.
Because most of the missionaries at this time were along the coast, right?
Right.
Few to none had really...
No one had penetrated. There were a couple mission posts, mainly Catholics, that had penetrated, but not the Protestants at all or any evangelicals, so to speak. So Maria actually took notice of Hudson, and she was impressed with his devotion to Jesus and his passion for the salvation of the Chinese people. For her, it matched her own passion, the reason she had come back for China, and her passion for Jesus. Unlike so many of the missionaries that she had met on this compound and seen, Hudson Taylor did not want to exploit the Chinese. He didn't bring them in to be his servants and his coolies and to help him live a dignified, impressive life, one that was above anything he could live in England, because that's what a lot of the missionaries did. They built these westernized houses. They lived on a compound, and the Chinese came in to serve them. And the only Chinese that were evangelized were those that were employed by the missionaries. And Hudson's like, no, we've got to go outside these walls. There are people outside these walls that need to hear the gospel. And that was his heart. That was his fervor. Well, you can imagine that not every missionary, especially those who were enjoying their Western lifestyles at the expense of the Chinese, took to Hudson. Many of them begin to resent him and say, you know, this upstart, he's just come. He's only been here for a year. He didn't even finish his medical studies. And, you know, he's thinking he's going to make a dynamic change for Jesus in, you know, China. Who does he think he is?
Right. And if I remember correctly, he had even kind of taken, he was wearing the dress
that will
of the
come
day.
After okay. 1855, right. 1855, he was still dressing like a Westerner.
Okay.
But interestingly enough, when he was evangelizing, what happened is he would give these stirring messages in Chinese, because he had already been studying Chinese from the time he was 17 years old back in England, because he felt the call at 17 years old to be a missionary to England. So he was already studying Chinese. So he was able to communicate. He was working on it. Again, he's living with the people. So it's full immersion. So he's learning Chinese and he's sharing. And he's got one man that says, teacher, I was listening to everything you said, but I just want to know, those shiny circles on the side of your jacket and then the slits on the other side, do they come together at any point? And he realized that the people were so distracted by
yes.
his Western wear that he wanted to dress as the Chinese did. And he did talk about how awkward it was at first to get used to the silk shoes and the pants that were, you know, so large, and the different ways that the Chinese dressed. It was awkward for him at first, having been used to Western wear. But he found, and not only that, I mean, this isn't in my notes. This is just a freebie because I love it. When he decided to dress as a Chinese, he tried to shave his own head because he was always trying to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And he was depending on the CSM for his support, CMS for his support. And what happened is there was corruption at the top back in England. And so they were either late in sending him support or it was greatly reduced.
Mm.
And so he didn't have enough money to actually make it. But by the grace of God, there was a man named Berger, who will come into our story later, who heard about him, was stirred when he read the reports of Hudson Taylor and felt prompted by the Holy Spirit to start giving. And his checks to Hudson Taylor would come just at the right times. Mm. And the other person that started supporting him, sometimes 5, sometimes 10 pounds, was George Mueller of the Bristol, the one who started all those orphanages by faith. Yes. One of my favorite books is on George Mueller, and it's written by Roger Steer. I mean, I cried when I finished that book.
It's a beautiful book.
It really is. So here is what is going on. And so he decides, because he wants to save money, that he's going to shave his own head and he's going to create his own ponytail. Well, he's got sandy hair. The shaving did not go really well, and his head was very sensitive. And he decided that he would dye his hair with ammonia. And instead, what he did is he burned his scalp.
Oh, no.
And he broke out in this rash. So he had to, at the end of the day, spend the money, go to a Chinese barber who weaved in hair to his ponytail so he would actually have a long ponytail like the Chinese. But again, that's neither here nor there. I just love that
story. Fun facts. And hasn't happened yet. So where we left off in the story, we're just starting to see Hudson wanting to, just the beginning of this idea, wanting to live like the people, not above the people, not according to Western ideals.
But and with the people.
With the people. And
with
like
the people. And treating them like equals.
Yes.
Treating them like those who are created in the image of God.
People that he's come to serve.
Right. Exactly. Again, Hudson began to travel, and he had a companion named Burns. Burns was excellent. They prayed hours together. They prayed before they went to bed. They prayed in the morning before they ever stepped out. And Hudson also continued to write letters home telling his family about the welfare, about his own welfare and what the Lord was doing. Now, at the same time as Hudson's feeling this, he's beginning to dress like the Chinese. He found that a really good inroad was using his medical school skills. So he had a medical bag that he would carry with him. And it's important to know that Hudson Taylor's father was a chemist. So he grew up knowing how to mix medicines, knowing how to treat people, because that's what his father did. Secondly, he also interned with a doctor in Hull, England. And so he did that for, you know, years and years. And then after that, he went to a medical college in London. And he was there for over a year. But what happened is the CMS contacted him, said, "We heard you're interested in going to China. The time is now."
Okay.
So Hudson weighed, should I go now or should I finish my medical studies? Because he only had like another year to go. But he felt like, I need to go now and I can see what they need. I can assess everything. And then if need be, I can come back and finish my medical studies. So he went to China and he realized that the need was so pressing. So he set up little medical clinics wherever he went, and he would treat people. He even did surgeries. He did amputations. He did whatever was needed. He administered medicines as best he could. And the Chinese were listening to him. He had some Chinese that had responded to the gospel and were now being discipled. And he was really, really excited about the direction everything was taking. So he and Burns decided to kind of make their base in a place called Swatow. And they set up like a little dispensary there so they could treat people. Mm-hmm. It was administering medications when he came on the radar of the Mandarin. So the Mandarin would be like kind of like a mayor or a governor of a certain region, and he was very wealthy, and they were usually without any moral compass at all. And this Mandarin was more like a mob boss, right? So he controlled all these mobsters. And so they begin to try to do a shakedown on Hudson and Burns, saying, you know, give us money or we'll destroy your place. Well, Hudson Taylor didn't have any money, and what he had, he gave away. And so one day, Hudson comes back to find that his clinic, his little living place, has been looted.
Oh, no.
And they even stole all his clothes and all Burns' clothes, as well as they had some money secreted away. All of it's gone. All the medicines are gone. Even his medical bag is gone. And he had all these New Testaments that were in Chinese. And the looters had burned all of it along with his bed and all his furniture. Everything was gone. And he just said to the Lord, How could you allow something like this? Now, it's interesting because this is now 1857, and he has been writing Elizabeth. She's been very cold to him. He's longing for somebody to share his passion and his ministry.
Yeah, he wants feeling the loneliness.
A soulmate,
yes.
Right? Well, then he takes and he gets really ill. His health had always been fragile, and now he's ill. He's got this depression. Everything that he's been done is up in flames. So he goes to Ningpo to recover. And there are two couples in Ningpo. One is this couple, Mr. and Mrs., or actually Reverend and Mrs. Gould, who just absolutely adore him, Frederick Gould. And another couple, Mr. and Mrs. Jones. And they just love him, believe in what he's doing. They're so excited about everything that the Lord's doing. And so they take him in and they're helping him to get better. And he's just pouring out his heart to Mr. Gould. You know, I wanted a helpmate. Elizabeth's being cold to me. And he said, Mr. Gould said, Reverend Gould, have you considered Maria? And he didn't want to tell the Reverend Gould that he was very attracted to her because he felt committed to Elizabeth. So he didn't say anything. He just said, you know, well, I'm committed. And so in the meantime, in the meantime, Maria had let her feelings for Hudson be known. She poured it out to Mrs. Gould. So now these two want to play matchmaker.
Okay.
They are so excited, and they can see what the Lord is doing with Hudson and that the Lord has brought him back, and all this has been allowed so he could meet Maria.
Well, he had previously met her there at the girls' school, right? And she had
yes.
kind of immediately taken to him, but he left to
right.
go do work, and now...
Yes, once a week, every one of the missionaries in Ningpo would meet at Miss Aldersey's school and have dinner together and fellowship. They were from different denominations, but they would meet together and just fellowship. But let me say this, as I said before, not all the missionaries on the compound appreciated Hudson. Some were greatly put off, especially by his adoption of the Chinese clothing. I mean, they just thought, this guy's lost it.
Yeah,
he
he's
is
gone too
so
far now.
Eccentric, right? So, as I said, Maria felt this attraction to Hudson from the first. She wrote to her brother Samuel, who was in London, I met a gentleman, and I cannot say that I loved him at once, but I felt interested in him and could not forget him. I saw him from time to time, and still this interest continued. I had no good reason to think it was reciprocated. He was very unobtrusive and never made any advances. So she wrote to her brother Samuel that she decided to take the whole situation to God.
Mm.
And that she would just pray and talk it out with God. Now, it's interesting. She's taller than Hudson. He's not as good looking as her other suitors. Again, he's got glasses. He's short. Now he's dressing like a Chinese, and he's slight of build. And yet this interest, this love, the more they observed each other, the deeper the attraction and love grew. Hudson began to pray that he could get out of his obligation to Elizabeth. Hudson returned to Shanghai, and he realized that he felt more deeply about Maria than he had ever felt towards Elizabeth or his first fiancée. In April of 1857, Hudson received word from Elizabeth in England that she was ending their engagement. Hudson was so excited that he sat down and he wrote a small letter to Maria, actually two letters, and he closed it in his correspondence to the Reverend Gow. He also let the Gows know of his feelings and his intentions, and they promised to commit Maria and Hudson to the Lord in prayer. Mrs. Gow took the letters from Hudson to Maria immediately. Maria recognized the writing and took them to her room. Before opening the letters, she prayed over them. In the letters, Hudson professed his love for Maria and told her that he felt that God had given him these strong feelings for her. When she told Miss Aldersey, she was so excited. The teacher was incensed. She immediately dictated a letter of rebuff and forced Maria to write it and send it. Miss Aldersey heartily disapproved of Hudson. She felt he was of too low a class. She was very prejudiced. And she was upset that he never finished his medical training and that his dressing in Chinese attire was over the top. Her disdain turned to aggressive hatred, and she wrote anyone she could against Hudson Taylor. So I'm going to leave it there. It's a total cliffhanger. And that's just part one of Maria, but it's a love story too. And so I can't wait to get into part two of Maria Dyer Taylor. Join us next week for sure.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.